Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas, Champlain Valley Game Night right here, 101.3 ESPN at 101.3ESPN.com. We go up until 6:45 today, and then we've got NIT basketball on the air. Seems like a long time ago since UVM was in the NIT against Middle Tennessee State. That was all the way back in round one, 2.5 weeks ago or so. Now we're down to the NIT Final Four. Penn State's in it. Mississippi State's involved in it. Western Kentucky, they're taking on Utah. So that coverage starts at 6:45, and then we will send you out to Madison Square Garden. So we do have lots to get to, lots to remind you about. Remember, opening day for the Red Sox is Thursday. You can watch with us over at Reuben James in Main Street on Main Street in Burlington. We've got Sam Adams specials, $3 Sam Adams. They've got IPA, seasonal beer. We'll give away Red Sox tickets. That is all going on. Trivia starts next week over at the Burger Bar in Colchester across from Fannie Allen next to St. Michael's. So if you're a St. Michael's College student especially, you need something fun to do within walking distance of campus, we want to see you there as well. 7:30 to 9:30, half-price appetizers, prizes, swag, and more. And remember, be listening tomorrow at 7:55 and 8:55 a.m. for the Golic and Wingo Word of the Day. We're trying to give you Red Sox tickets as well. Here's, we've got tickets all through the month of April. So if you want to get in, 802-655-6672. You can do that on the Town Fair Tire text line. And we're 15 minutes away from Jimmy Dykes, who's going to join us. 20 minutes away. Jimmy Dykes is going to join us, ESPN college basketball broadcaster and analyst and longtime basketball head coach. We'll talk about the Final Four. We'll get a little bit into Trey Bell Haynes because he had watched Vermont play this year against Kentucky. And we'll tell you about a coaching move involving Jeff Capel being hired at the University of Pittsburgh and why actually you here in Burlington should be happy about that. So we'll get to all that. Also coming up today, we'll tell you why last night was a very good night for the NBA. But first and foremost, it's been a while since we've gotten to play batting practice. Remember, batting practice, the best sound bites in sports, who's saying what and what's going on. Well, we've got some sound from the NFL owners meeting, so let's get to that right off the bat.
Champlain Valley Game Night, batting practice.
Batting practice here on this Monday, and let's go with it all from the owners' meetings. Robert Kraft speaking on behalf of the New England Patriots, talking about Bill Belichick. Does he agree with the decision to bench Malcolm Butler for the Super Bowl? Robert Kraft speaks.
As a fan, you know, I can question some of the moves. As someone who's privileged to be the owner of this team, I encourage him to keep going with his instincts and doing what he thinks is right. There's no doubt in my mind, even if he made an error, and this is true with any of our managers, that if they're doing it for the right reason, then I support it 100%. And I have never had one instance in the 18 years where Bill hasn't done what he believes is in the best interest of our team and help us to win games.
Bill Belichick has a track record that says that you can't question every decision. You have to. You know, look, I get tired of the "in Bill we trust." I think fans throw that around as an arrogance thing, as a way to just slough off all criticism. Well, in Bill we trust. Well, in Bill we trust. Obviously that we won before. Fans do that, and it's annoying. The owner does it, and he's got to believe that Bill Belichick is acting in the best interest of the franchise. He said, look, I used to sit at Schaefer Stadium when we would never make the playoffs. Now we're in a position where we've had one of the best runs in NFL history here. We've got 5 Super Bowls in the last 18 years. He said that's a high-class problem to have. So, yeah, this year didn't work out. Yeah, Robert Kraft and everyone are disappointed the Patriots didn't win. And even Robert Kraft might be able to look at the result and say that was the wrong decision. But he does have to trust that Belichick is doing it for the right reason. And that right reason is that he thinks that's the best opportunity for the Patriots to win. That's how the owner has to feel. Sports radio doesn't have to feel that way. The fans don't have to feel that way. We can all be mad. We can all question. But Robert Kraft, at least publicly, has to say I have to trust my head coach because we've had so much success and Bill has been at the forefront of all of it that I have to trust that he's got our best interests at heart. Continuing on Malcolm Butler, is he disappointed that Butler left New England? Does he have any resentment for Butler for going to Tennessee?
He's such a humble, nice young man. I was thinking about it. He's making, what, $8.50 an hour at Popeyes, and 7 months later, he's making the biggest play in the history of Super Bowls, in my opinion. And he's a great guy. I'm just sorry it didn't work out for him with us. But I'm happy he got the contract he got, and he's doing it with some Patriot-related people up in Tennessee, and Vrabel and the GM. And so I wish him well, and I'll miss him.
At the end of the day, I think the Patriots got this one right with Malcolm Butler and letting him go. I'm not saying they got it right in terms of him being benched in the Super Bowl. I still think he should have played. But I don't think you could afford to be playing Gilmore and Butler that big of money. I mean, Gilmore had a 5-year deal. Butler got a, whatever, 5-year deal. And we're talking about money that's in the 70s, $30 million guaranteed plus. You can't afford to play both defensive backs that are going to be past 30 when those contracts end. You can't afford to have that kind of financial burden in your secondary where you're going to have two guys pushing 30, and you've already got a secondary piece in McCourty and Devin McCourty pushing 30 as well, past 30. So you can't have that situation. Butler did regress last year. I still think they handled it wrong last offseason. I would not have given at the time the big money to Gilmore. I felt betrayed for Butler last year, and I'm so far removed from the situation that I can only imagine how he felt. Butler should have been last year. Like, I helped you win a Super Bowl. I have been here forever. I shut down Antonio Brown in the AFC Championship game in 2016, and now you're going to go pay an outsider who statistically wasn't even in my ballpark in 2016. He was going to get the money. I think the Patriots handled this wrong last offseason, but this offseason I think they were right to let him go because they have that money invested in Gilmore. Now they need to go out and make a savvy signing or a savvy trade like they did with Jason McCourty, and they need to go address it in the draft. So I don't know that Robert Kraft can say anything different than what he said. He spoke highly of him. They're not throwing slander towards him or dirt on his name about anything that may have happened in the week of the Super Bowl, either on the field or off it. I think they're handling this one right, and I think with all the circumstances in play, with particularly that money already being tied up in Gilmore, they really had no choice but then to let Malcolm Butler go. It's Batting Practice talking NFL owners meetings right here on Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Robert Kraft also talking about the supposed tension in the organization between him, Bill Belichick, and Tom Brady.
In any successful business rule, in a marriage, if you have a good relationship, there's going to be things where you disagree. But hopefully, you know, you come together and you have a meeting of the minds and you discuss things. And if everyone's all on the same page, usually things don't go as well.
I hope that Seth Wickersham gets an apology from Patriot fans, because Patriot fans, in the same way that they throw around the term "In Bill We Trust" or "Kiss the Rings," we get the same kind of thing being said about ESPN. Oh, ESPN hates us. ESPN's out to get us. ESPN can't stand the Patriots. And that's not the case. Seth Wickersham was on this tension that exists before we knew there was tension, before we had heard anyone else come out with tension. The Guerrero stuff is real. The Brady stuff is real. Even Giselle says Tom Brady wants to be appreciated and wants to have fun. You've got the cryptic Instagram posts from Gronk. You've got the mass exodus from Amendola and Solder. And you've got Cameron Fleming leaving and Deion Lewis leaving and Malcolm Butler leaving. There is tension there, and it is real. And I'm sorry, Patriot fans, that it is. It doesn't mean the organization isn't great. It doesn't mean the organization won't be successful again in the future. It doesn't mean they won't be good next year. And I'm not dancing on the graves because I don't think this is the death of the Patriots. But you're being naive if you sit back and say that nothing went on this season. If you said there was no tension this season and you just dismissed what Seth Wickersham wrote, then you were being naive and you were wrong. There's something real there. Hopefully it can be overcome. but there was something real there. If there wasn't, we wouldn't need to have this meeting of the minds that Robert Kraft talks about. Yes, every NFL player, for the most part, goes and has an exit interview. What can I do in the offseason? What can I improve upon? Here's the conditioning regimen that I want to use. We recommend that you lose 10 pounds. I recommend that I gain 10 pounds to help me play better on the offensive line. Those are traditional exit interviews among NFL players and NFL teams. I don't know that the quarterback, the owner, and the head coach are sitting down ironing out issues. Maybe Russell Wilson sits with Pete Carroll and John Schneider and says, look, I need a better offensive line. I need a dynamic playmaker. Maybe those things happen. In fact, I bet those happen. I don't know that we're sitting here talking about ways to iron out differences. I don't know that Drew Brees, Sean Payton, and the owner of the Saints are sitting down doing that. I don't know that Russell Wilson is doing that with John Schneider and Pete Carroll. I don't know that Aaron Rodgers is doing that. But Tom Brady had to do that, and Robert Kraft is talking about it. So, I think there's something there. Moving on, continuing, Robert Kraft talking about the quarterback position. Did the Pats need to draft one?
Obviously, at some point, we have to, because not just that, but you think about it. Think what happened in the 08 season when in the first quarter against Kansas City, Tom goes out. And how many people would have said that Matt Cassel would have led us to an 11-5 season? So, once again, I put my faith and confidence in Bill, and he knows his responsibilities, and anything can happen.
The Patriots do need to draft a quarterback, and they do need to draft a quarterback this year, and that's just as simple as that. The Patriots, I don't trust Brian Hoyer to be the quarterback of the future. I don't trust Brian Hoyer really to be a capable backup if the Pats needed him this year. The Patriots need to develop a quarterback. They need to draft another quarterback so they can develop him. And I think they're going to have to do it relatively high up. They drafted Jimmy Garoppolo in the second round, or they drafted him in 2014 or whatever it was. I don't know if they need to go that high, but third round, I would say, absolutely viable. End of the third round the Patriots are picking, I think they definitely need a quarterback in this draft, and they're going to need one sooner rather than later because this can't last forever. Let's get one more clip. Robert Kraft talking about Josh McDaniels, how he came back to New England.
It's very important. I can't tell you how happy I am he's coming back. You know, I think he's the best offensive coordinator and has shown that when he's been with us. And he has a great football intellect, and we're really happy he decided to stay with us.
Look, I'm happy for the Patriots also. It's a good thing to have continuity on your offensive staff. It's a good thing to have that continuity on the offensive side of things, because you don't have it on the defensive side of things with Matt Patricia leaving and Bill Belichick not even going to name a defensive coordinator. He's just going to let the team kind of expand the roles of Brian Flores, of himself, and that stretches Bill Belichick thin. They don't have to do that on the offensive side of things. That is good for the Patriots. I don't think it's good for the league, though. I don't think it's a good reflection on McDaniels at all, and I still think that he has hurt his chances of getting a head coaching job anywhere but New England. All right, that was a recap from the NFL owners' meetings at Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Jimmy Dykes is going to join us at about 6:25. He is a college basketball broadcaster at ESPN. We'll tell you a little bit about why you should care about the Jeff Capel hiring at Pittsburgh. He's the former Duke assistant coach. We'll get into the Final Four, and we'll talk a little bit of University of Vermont basketball with him as well. Transitioning real quick, though, over to the NBA. Last night was a great night for the league, and I watch a lot of NBA basketball. I watch a lot of the Celtics and then a lot of the other, quote, bigger matchups. So I get very into the Celtics, and I'm very in tune with them, and then I'll watch other big matchups that are going on. Cavs are playing, Warriors are playing, Blazers are playing, Rockets are playing. I get interested in the things that most fans get interested in. Yesterday was a great night because Markelle Fultz came back. You had the number one pick in the NBA draft, finally healthy, 68-game absence. Then you had Tatum for the Celtics, the number three pick in the draft, going up against Josh Jackson of the Suns, the number four pick in the draft. And you saw some of the young stars in basketball fully on display. The only thing that could have made it better is if that Celtics-Suns game was on the East Coast and not the West Coast. I mean, listen to some of the things that happened last night. In Fultz, you see him on the court with two of the game's brightest young stars in Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. Embiid, social media personality, his ability to play down low and outside. He's a stretch 4-5 again in every sense of the word. He's the modern-day center. He can play down low, and he can take it outside. He's got a great personality. He is a budding star in this league as long as he's healthy. You've got Ben Simmons, another one of the cornerstone trust-the-process guys, and now you've got Fultz. And all Fultz did yesterday was play 15 minutes, a little less than 15 minutes. He had 10 points and 8 assists. He is only the second player ever since 1954-1955, when the shot clock was introduced, to record 10 points and 8 assists in fewer than 15 minutes. He is the second player ever since the shot clock was implemented in 1954-5 to record 10 points and 8 assists in less than 15 minutes. And you saw not only his performance, you saw him on the court with Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. That is a great look for the Sixers, because the basketball the NBA marketplace, if it has Philadelphia viable and strong again, that is much better for the NBA. We remember how vibrant and popular Philadelphia was when Allen Iverson was there. If you start getting Markelle Fultz with Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, you can get Philadelphia very, very relevant. And you throw that in with Boston's research, with Boston being good, with wherever LeBron is, and with Los Angeles and the Lakers and Lonzo Ball, now you've gotten some of these markets that have been downtrodden for a few years. And in Philly's case, for about the last 6-7 years, you've got them revitalized, and that's good for the league. And then on the Celtics and on Tatum and Jackson, I mean, both players scored 23 points last night, and that is really, really great that you had 3 and 4 in the draft going up against each other. You had Duke versus Kansas going up against each other. And in a game where the two teams' best players didn't play, Devin Booker didn't play for Phoenix, and Kyrie Irving didn't play for Boston, you saw these rookies carry their team. And you saw the next wave of talent fully on display last night. It was really, really fun. And just the battle that they went on from the start. The rookies combined to score 21 points in the first quarter. Jackson had 12 of Phoenix's 15. Tatum had 9 of Boston's 31. Through the final quarter, they both finished with 23 points, 6 rebounds, and 2 steals. They had the exact same stat line. They came in they finished with identical numbers in the three main categories, but Tatum was more efficient. He shot 56% from the floor, 67% from three, and he did all that in just 32 minutes of action. Josh Jackson had to shoot a little bit more. He still shot well. He shot 60% from the floor, but only 30% from three, and really struggled under 50% at the line. So, I mean, there were some, Tatum played better. He was more efficient, but bottom line, you saw everything that these guys have to offer. You saw Fultz show his slashing ability. He also hit a couple of jumpers, leading us to believe that his shoulder is much better for the Sixers. You saw Jackson, his ability to get to the rim, also with some ball handling ability. And Tatum, he just looks smooth. He just looks smooth. And we're going to be talking about Tatum winning Rookie of the Year, potentially. I was saying all along that I thought that Tatum would win Rookie of the Year. I said that all summer. And then I backtracked because I was like, well, he's not going to play as much and not have as much of a chance to accumulate stats as Lonzo Ball or Ben Simmons. Now, Lonzo's been hurt. I think that takes him out of it. Simmons, I really got to look at his numbers. But Tatum has been phenomenal. And with Gordon Hayward getting hurt, he's gotten those minutes that I wasn't sure that he was going to get. All right, it's Champlain Valley Game Night here on a Tuesday. Remember, we go up until 6:45, and then we've got NIT action as it is. The Final Four, Penn State, Mississippi State, Western Kentucky taking on Utah. We'll talk about all the goings-on in college basketball with Jimmy Dykes of ESPN. We'll do it next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Go Lake and Wingo.
We got a big Wednesday.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, welcome back. Champlain Valley Game Night right here on a Tuesday on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Remember, we go up until 6:45 today, and then we bring you NIT basketball in the semifinals of the NIT. It feels like forever ago that UVM was in the NIT, and we wish that they were still playing. But a lot going on in college basketball in addition to the NIT. We've also got, obviously, the Final Four coming up this Saturday. Loyola, Chicago, and Michigan, Kansas, and Villanova. Plenty of other news also. Pittsburgh going to hire Capel away from Duke to be their head coach. Capel had been a Duke assistant. We'll tell you why we care about that in 1 second as well. Let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line and find ourselves ESPN college basketball broadcaster and longtime college hoops coach on both the men and the women's side. It's Jimmy Dykes. Jimmy, thanks for being with us. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on today.
Well, I appreciate you joining us. Let's start with the news about Jeff Capel being hired by Pittsburgh. And up here in Vermont, we are not Jeff Capel, we don't care about that hire so much, other than the fact that that means John Becker, UVM men's basketball coach, is not going to Pittsburgh. What do you make of Jeff Capel, though, at Pitt?
Yeah, I'm with you on keeping your coach at Vermont. I had their game this year at Kentucky, and so impressed, man, so impressed with that team and how they did things and with coach and his philosophy and how hard their team played. And so I hear the celebration in the background for keeping your coach. So yeah, I think the hire kind of comes out of the last stable in the horse race. Like, we didn't even hear Jeff's name being mentioned for it, but you know, he's obviously comes out of a program that knows how to win. He knows how to build a program, knows how to have a culture and a personality about how they do things. You know, Coach K is one of the five or six guys I think most coaches would say I'd like to study under him for 2 or 3 years or 4 years, and Jeff's had that luxury for longer than that. You know, he's been a head coach. He's a head coach at Oklahoma, I think, from like 2006 to 2010 or 11, somewhere in there, and he could recruit. You know, he had Blake Griffin at the time, which was the number one overall pick in the NBA draft. So, and Jeff comes from basketball families, plugged in the recruiting circles. So I think it's a guy that I think it's the fit is what you're after, and being in that ACC and being around that part of the country as much as he's been out recruiting, not only as a head coach at Oklahoma, but all those times as an assistant and different places that he's been at VCU as well, then I think it's a solid hire. But the problem is the job's really hard. It was in a rebuilding mode when Kevin got it, still in a rebuilding mode in a league that's a very unforgiving league.
You mentioned having the UVM game against Kentucky, and we talk about John Becker. Last year, John Becker was the talk of, you know, off-season coaching rumors. Team had the longest winning streak in the country. They made the tournament, took Purdue to the edge in the first round. This year, they get upset in the conference final by UMBC, and we're not hearing as much around John Becker. Does one game, does one loss in a conference final at the buzzer really diminish your value that much?
It shouldn't, you know, it shouldn't. But, you know, for your all's sake, it's a good thing that's happened, probably, because he gets in and who knows, you know, where he's at right now. But yeah, that's always the quandary as an athletic director. I think at that level is, I mean, you get a guy that wins and does it the right way, and that doing it the right way thing is probably has even more value right now with all the extra stuff going on out there. So, but that's a good team. You guys know it. You've seen them play, and for UMBC to beat those guys on their home court, I didn't know anything about UMBC other than the fact that they had beaten Vermont. I knew Vermont was a really good team. I did know that, so I was like, well, if nothing else, I know UMBC is good because they beat a good team.
Jimmy Dykes, college basketball broadcaster, with us here on Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Ryan Odom's the head coach at UMBC, and kind of surprising to me, he's going to remain the head coach at UMBC. So if we look at a league in the America East where you've got Ryan Odom, who's done the unthinkable, lead a 16 to beat a 1, John Becker, who's got established history of winning, and Will Brown at Albany, who's been doing it for 15 years and been in the tournament 5 times, all of a sudden the America East, it's not the bottom feeder league that it used to be perceived as.
No, it's not. It's not. The key is to continue to keep your name out there, you know, on the national level. And how do you do that? If you're in that league, you get in the NCAA tournament and you win a game. You know, whether that's fair or not, that's what you have to do. If not, then you just become a league that for 1 year, we heard about you more than normal. And then you slip back away. But that's a good league. And it does start, I still think, with Vermont. They've been the consistent team in that league over the last several years over a long period of stretch, really. Yeah. And I think we're learning in March right now that there's a lot of good basketball that's played outside of the Power Five conferences as well, and that America East is one of them. They have good players, like they have guys that could play for anyone in the country. You know, Vermont's point guard this year and the Lamb kid, man, those two dudes could play. They could play with anyone at any time on any court. And the Lyles kid from UMBC is the same way. So, but that's the key. That's the key for any coach, any program, any conference. Got to keep winning. Got to keep winning because teams are always trying to pass you by.
We'll talk about the Final Four in a second, but you mentioned Trey Bell Haynes, UVM point guard. He's going to be down at the Final Four this year, also playing in the senior game, basically the senior all-star game, and also this new 3-on-3 tournament that it's NCAA bat. It's not NCAA affiliated, but it's NCAA players. That's actually a pretty cool idea. I think there's a lot of good stuff going on at the Final Four outside of the games themselves, you know, for the national semis.
Yeah, Bell Haynes is I was so impressed with him when I saw him in film and in person. He's exceptionally quick and can really score. He's fast. I'm kind of anxious to see how that 3-on-3 tournament goes myself. The Final Four is just a fabulous end to the season with so many things going on, from concerts to all-star games to three-point slam dunk competitions. And then obviously the games themselves. And San Antonio is a terrific city to have it in. I've been there before for the Final Four, and everything has been walking distance. The Riverwalk area just adds another element to that weekend. The weather's supposed to be perfect. So I'll be down there starting on Friday doing work for SiriusXM Radio all weekend long, and really looking forward to it. Four teams that you can argue all have a legitimate reason, or you could build a case of why they're going to cut down the nets. And Loyola's right there in the middle of that conversation in my eyes.
What has made them so good? Loyola's Chicago taking on Michigan. What has made them so good?
They got good players. I mean, Clayton Custer could play for anybody. I mean, he's a Missouri Valley Conference Player of the Year, and Loyola is 30-2 this year when he's been on the floor. They're 32-5 overall, but they lost three of their games when he was out with an ankle injury, and he's just a darn good 6'1", tough kid that can make plays, and their brand of basketball is a winning brand in terms of how they run their offense, how they screen, how they read screens, how they keep the ball moving. They're a great defensive team, a team defense, and they have good individual defenders. They're very well prepared. They're no joke. Like I would not be surprised at all if they don't beat Michigan. And Michigan's going to have to play well. Michigan cannot shoot the ball like they have done so far in three of these four games. From the three-point line and beat Loyola. They can't shoot 26-28% like they've gotten away with a couple of times, or 18% like they did against Florida State. If they do that, Loyola will be in the national championship game.
Let's move over to the other semifinal between Kansas and Villanova. This is your blue blood programs. This is your overall, well, not your overall number one seed, but a team that a lot of people had winning it in Villanova. What do you think of this matchup?
Well, for Villanova, it starts with Jalen Brunson. He's as unique of a player that we have in the entire tournament as a point guard. It is terrific off the shot fake. He's a lights-out shooter. He's crafty. He's so good at backing people down as a point guard, and he gets himself with a ball on the post, and now he's either a scorer on the post or a passer. They just don't have any flaws when you really break them down, and they've been hammering people in the tournament. Like, their closest game has been a 12-point game to West Virginia and Texas Tech, two teams that are really, really good. I've seen them both this year. I mean, they just choked the life out of Radford and Bama, and so they've been rolling in this tournament. They don't do stupid stuff. They're an older team with a bunch of redshirt kids that are older than what their classification is. Bridges is a lottery pick waiting to happen. He's a 6'7" long arm kid that makes shots and drives it. DiVincenzo is a lights out shooter. I mean, they can all shoot it. They put so much pressure on you defensively because they can all shoot the ball, like really shoot it. But it all starts with Brunson, and same way on the other team, Kansas, it all starts with Devontae Graham. Now, he hasn't been their best player the last couple of games, but if Kansas is going to win the whole thing, Devontae Graham is going to have a big part in the say-so of that. So that's a matchup that a lot of people will say the winner of that game will be the national champion, but I don't know. I don't know, because that's going to be such a hard-fought game, and then you have a day to recover to come back and try to win the whole thing on Monday night against two teams, Michigan and Loyola, that have no fear and can play with anybody. So I think it all lines up to be just a really entertaining and engaging Final Four in all three games we're getting ready to watch.
Jimmy Dykes, ESPN broadcaster, longtime college basketball coach with us. Jimmy, we'll get you out of here on this one. Up here at the University of Vermont, we're in the process of
of getting a new arena, and hopefully shovels are in the ground next year. And a lot of people have said, do facilities make that big of a difference when it comes to recruiting? I think yes. You've coached at the highest level, and you've seen some of the programs at the highest level. How big a deal are new updated facilities?
Yeah, I think it's huge, especially a practice facility is of utmost importance. You have to have a good one. You know, the kids are going to live in that gym. You don't want them to be knocked out in recruiting by a team that says they don't have a practice facility. We do. You can't work on your game 24 hours a day at that school like you can at ours. So that's probably, to me, more important than the game facility. And then your game facility wants to be, I think it has to be the right size and has to be full on game nights. That's the most important thing. And whether that's in a 50-year-old arena or a 5-month-old arena, what does it look like on game night is what's going to attract kids. And Vermont has that fan base in place. So I've heard the same, the same story from Vermont that new facility is coming, and I'm sure they'll build it the right size. It doesn't need to be too big, and it won't be. But it's just a continued commitment from that campus towards basketball, and Vermont has as strong of a commitment in their league or in the mid-major level as there is out there to that sport.
Jimmy Dykes, ESPN broadcaster, longtime hoops coach. Jimmy, enjoy the Final Four, and we appreciate the time.
Okay, guys. Thanks for having me.
Jimmy Dykes, great stuff there. Longtime college hoop coach on both the men and the women's side. Was most recently the head coach of the women's team at the University of Arkansas, which was his alma mater where he played. Also was a scout for the Seattle Supersonics of the NBA. So some fluctuation there in his career between college and the pro game back to college. But would have loved to have asked him, should have asked him about his work with the Sonics, because I was a Sonics fan, and now the Sonics unfortunately defunct. But I got a feeling NHL team's going to be coming to Seattle. I think Seattle's going to get the NBA back soon, but I don't want Seattle to get somebody else's NBA team. I don't want there to be somewhere a 10-year-old kid crying that his favorite team moved, because I remember how painful that was for me to see the Sonics leave, and I remember seeing the Cleveland Browns leave when I was really young and seeing the effect that had on my dad and the effect that still has on my dad. My dad's not as big a football fan now as he was pre-1995-96 when the Browns left and moved to Baltimore. So I think Seattle's going to get a team, and Jimmy worked with the Sonics, the team that was there. Lots of good stuff that he said, too, particularly on the facilities. We're going to get to that tomorrow, and I'm going to play some of that back for Rich and Arnie, because Arnie the other day was not really buying that facilities made all that big a difference to kids. I think it absolutely makes a difference. Kids want to come in and see something new, modern, shiny. It shows that you're invested. It shows that they can, that they can shine. It makes them feel big time. So you talk about, you're only going to a low major. Yeah, but look at what my resources are here. Look at what my facilities are. And I also found it really interesting about what he was saying capacity of your arena should be, that your goal should be to have that place filled on game day. So originally I thought that Vermont needed to go to, right now Patrick Gym's, 3,500, 3,300, somewhere in there. I thought that Vermont needed to make this thing maybe no more than 5,000 so that it would stay full. But now I'm thinking it's going to be, this arena needs to be in that, I would say no more than 5,000, 4,500, 5,000 tops. You want this thing to be full, and it leaves you a little bit of room to expand your student fan base, because the townspeople are coming out to Vermont games. What you need to work on is the student base. And I'll make this point to Arnie and Rich tomorrow when we talk about this in the huddle as well. You want to leave yourself some room to expand that student base, but remember that your fans, your student base is gone for a large majority of the season. Between December 10th, right around the start of the traditional finals week, and January 21st or so, your students are gone for more than a month there, and you're missing out on a number of conference games. So if you hit a year where your students come back and you are 2-6 in conference, and I don't think that that's going to be the case at Vermont, but that's just an example. If you're not in play for a conference title by the time those students come back, you're not getting them for the rest of the season either. So you can't have a 7,000-seat arena of which you're only going to draw 3,000 townspeople and no students. You got to do this realistically. I think 4,700, 5,000, I think that's the limit for a new facility at UVM. Well, let's talk about it again. We had Jeff Shulman on last week. We'll have to get him on again at some point during the summer and ask him kind of what those plans are for UVM and the new facility in terms of those logistics. But big props to Jimmy Dykes for coming on. We appreciate his work over at ESPN. All right, that'll do it for us. I got to get to a basketball game. Arnie and I, Arnie's already texted me. He says, where are you? Where are you? You got to get here. I'm Arnie. I am working. Some of us have to go up until the end. We can't all be as lucky as you to get 1,000 warm-up shots in. So NIT basketball is next. Man, we wish UVM was playing. Join us tomorrow, everybody. 101.3 ESPN.